able, Mohamed Bakri, when he was facing jail for his documentary called Janine, Janine. But before we end, I wanted to ask you, Farah, about that theme that runs through this of 1,000 Palestinians freed for one Israeli hostage.
You know, I think it comes back to a little bit about what you were asking, Saleh. This morning, I was looking out my window and I was thinking the equivalent when we think about imbalance in value for human life. This is a story inspired by, in 2011, an Israeli occupation soldier was exchanged for over 1,000 Palestinian political prisoners, hundreds of whom were women and children, hundreds of whom were being held in administrative detention, which, as you know, is without trial or charge. And that just seemed like such a massive imbalance.
We have 20 seconds.
But today we can see that there is no value for Palestinian life. And the equivalent in New York would be around 1 million Palestinians or 1 million New Yorkers being brutally killed, blinded, burned, and 8 million displaced. Where's the value?
I want to thank you both for being with us. Farah Nabulsi, BAFTA-winning, Oscar-nominated British-Palestinian director, and Saleh Bakri, Palestinian actor and star of The Teacher. It premieres tonight in New York and around the country.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Well, hello. What's this? Would you look at that? It's KBOO's special Earth Day Marathon coming up on Tuesday, April 22nd. Looks like it'll feature local environmental advocates, native perspectives, earth-conscious music, radio shows en español, and plenty of nature sounds. A full day's worth, it looks like. KBOO's Earth Day programming kicks off on Monday, April 21st at 10 p.m. and runs through 10 p.m. Tuesday. All the information is online at kboo.fm/earthday. That's kboo.fm/earthday. Leave it better than you found it.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, gun control bills advance through the Oregon legislature.
The mayor of Walport, Oregon is pushed out of office.
And KBOO remembers the life and work of Portland Police Accountability Advocate Dan Handelman.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News. For Friday, April 11th, 2025, I'm Tim Nakayama.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Three bills related to Oregon's gun laws are advancing to the floor of both legislative chambers. The bills would create a 72-hour waiting period for gun purchases, ban rapid-fire devices, initiate a state licensing program for gun dealers, and lay the framework to implement ballot measure 114. That measure, passed in 2022, bans purchases of magazines that hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition and requires a permit before buying a gun. Gun deaths increased 40% from 2001 to 2023, according to research from OHSU and Portland State University. In 2023, the rate of gun deaths in Oregon was 7% higher than the national average, 22% higher than in Washington State, and 74% higher than in California. Opponents contend the legislation would infringe upon Oregonians' rights while doing little to address mental health problems they think are actually responsible. Of the 3,125 people who died by firearms in Oregon between 2019 and 2023, over 2,000 were suicides. House Minority Leader Christine Drazen, Republican from Canby, said, quote, "These bills are an attack on the constitutional right to bear arms. The only thing these bills do is punish law-abiding gun owners and small businesses that are in full compliance with federal law," end quote. Oregon gun laws are among the strictest in the nation. Senate Bill 243 would ban rapid-fire devices like bump stocks that make semi-automatic guns fully automatic and create at least a 72-hour waiting period to obtain a gun. It would also give local governments the authority to decide firearm rules in public buildings.
Proponents believe the bill could stop impulsive gun purchases that can lead to violence or suicide and keep rapid-fire weapons out of the hands of mass shooters. The bill now moves to the office of Senate President Rob Wagner, who will decide whether it goes immediately to the floor, stays at his desk, or goes to a different committee. House Bill 3075 lays a framework for the implementation of Measure 114. It also gives authorities more time to grant a gun permit and increases the permit fee. House Bill 3076 directs the Oregon Department of Justice to create a state licensure program for gun dealers. Democrats believe many Oregonians want to improve background checks and increase oversight over gun dealers. House Republicans clearly disagree, saying the firearms industry already follows extensive federal regulations. Jesse Marks, executive director for the Gun Safety Advocacy Group, Alliance for a Safe Oregon, said regulations have not kept pace as firearm technology has shifted. Federal gun regulations might also face further cuts by the Trump administration. In 2023, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives inspected just 34 firearm dealers in Oregon. That's fewer than 2% of the roughly 2,000 dealers statewide. In March, the Oregon Court of Appeals ruled that voter-approved Measure 114 does not violate the state constitution. An appeal to the Oregon Supreme Court is likely.
Washington State's wolf population fell by nearly 10% last year, according to a new report by the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. Wildlife advocates say the animals are misunderstood and deserve more protection. KBOO reporter Kenny has more.
Wildlife advocates are alarmed by a new Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife report showing the state's wolf population fell nearly 10% last year. The vast majority of the wolves were illegally and legally killed by humans. The report also shows the number of successfully breeding pairs, a key population indicator, dropped 25% last year. Almarok Weiss of the Center for Biological Diversity says 7 illegal killings are under investigation, though the true number is likely higher.
For every animal you find that has been illegally killed, there are 1 to 2 additional animals that were also illegally killed whose deaths will never be discovered.
Since 2016, wolf deaths in the state have continued to rise. Last year, the Fish and Wildlife Commission rejected a proposal to reduce protections for wolves from state endangered to state sensitive because of increased deaths. Weiss says that many myths about wolves need debunking. She notes that predator-related livestock deaths are rare, with most losses caused by issues like dehydration and birthing complications. In Washington, wolf-related losses made up less than 0.1% of livestock deaths in 2024. Weiss emphasizes that the wolves are crucial for healthy ecosystems because they prevent overbrowsing by deer and elk.
That allows vegetation to grow back, and that provides building materials for beaver and nesting materials for migrating neotropical birds. It provides all kinds of habitat for other species.
Weiss explains that Washington's wolf plan splits the state into 3 recovery regions aiming for breeding pairs in each. The third region, encompassing the Southern Cascades and North Coast, does not have any. As more wolves are killed in eastern Washington, Weiss says that fewer are left to move west, and those that do often fall victim to illegal killings. Weiss says she wants the state to maintain protections for wolves.
And really do a lot more public education to help people understand we can live with them and that we need them.
For KABU News and the Public News Service, I'm Kenny.
The mayor of the coastal Oregon town of Walport was removed from office last week and arrested this week for trying to force her way into a city council meeting. Heidi Lambert was elected in November, and city councilors voted unanimously to remove her from office last week. They say Lambert violated the city charter by coming to City Hall and demanding staff follow her direction, creating a hostile work environment. In Walport, the city manager is supposed to direct the staff, not the mayor. The city council wrote in a letter explaining her removal, quote, "We have never had an elected city official treat staff this way. What may seem like a minor incident is actually a serious legal concern," end quote. Then on Thursday, Lambert told councilors she would come to the city council meeting intending to run it as usual. They got an exclusion order from the Lincoln County Sheriff, who told Lambert she could come into City Hall, but only as a regular citizen. The sheriff says Lambert ignored that order and was ultimately escorted from the room. The underlying issue has to do with a local civic group called Beachcomber Days, which runs a summer community market and the annual community festival. The city manager paused a permit for the group after finding indication the group had given scholarships to the children of Beachcomber board members, something not allowed by the IRS. Beachcomber members have called for the city council to investigate the city manager for misconduct, sending letters to the city. The Lincoln Chronicle reports that's what led to Mayor Lambert to directly order work from city staff. She wanted them to send the complaint letter about the city manager to the councilors.
Longtime vaccine skeptic and current Health and Human Services Director Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is changing his tune on the measles vaccine. Kennedy has promoted a debunked theory linking the vaccine with autism until a measles outbreak in Texas forced him to change course. He said, quote, "The federal government's position, my position, is that people should get the measles vaccine," end quote, "but that the government should not mandate its use." Vaccine skeptics celebrated Kennedy's appointment to the post, which was widely criticized by world health experts. Since then, his supporters have responded with feelings of betrayal and disappointment to the news. Kennedy argues, however, quote, "I always said during my campaign, I'm not going to take people's vaccines away from them," end quote. Health experts say the HHS director isn't doing enough to promote the vaccine, which is the most effective way to prevent measles, out of loyalty to this demographic of vaccine skeptics. The outbreak in Texas began in late January, and by mid-April, over 500 cases were reported, along with the deaths of two unvaccinated school-age children. World health experts have repeatedly said that vaccines are not the risk recent skeptics believe. The current trend towards skepticism among a small percentage of Americans is based on a falsified and subsequently retracted paper published in 1998.
Speaker Johnson says safety net programs will be protected in House budget. Secretary of State Rubio defends the administration's revoking of hundreds of student visas, and rural libraries could close as federal funding is cut. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We're going to protect the essential programs for everybody who's eligible to receive those. And you'll see that reflected in the final bill. But I think it's very important for us to note that we'll be looking for $1.5 trillion in savings.
House Speaker Mike Johnson insists President Donald Trump and Republicans will not touch Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. The House reached agreement with the Senate to pass a budget outline in line with Trump's tax cut, immigration, and military spending priorities. When lawmakers return from a two-week recess, Republicans will face the hard job of identifying specific cuts. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says Democrats are demanding investigation into insider trading by lawmakers during the recent stock market surge caused by an administration about-face on tariffs.
We need to get to the bottom of the possible stock manipulation that is unfolding before the American people, including what, if any, advanced knowledge did members of the House Republican Conference have of Trump's decision to pause the reckless tariffs that he put into place.
Just ahead of announcing a 90-day tariff pause, which caused stocks to skyrocket, Trump posted on social media that it was, quote, a great time to buy. But before that post, bets on a market surge rose by more than 2,000% in a single hour. Stocks crashed again Thursday. In response to U.S. 125% tariffs on Chinese goods, China just put an 84% levy on U.S. products. The State Department is defending its move to revoke international student visas, even as legal observers charge they are specifically targeted to silence critics of U.S. foreign policy. Secretary of State Marco Rubio repeated Thursday that student visas are a privilege, not a right. He says the revocations will continue. The Federal Emergency Management Agency has abruptly ended a key disaster preparedness effort, sparking concerns for hurricane season. The Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities program distributed billions for projects including floodplain restoration and storm restraint infrastructure. M. Donahoe with the National Wildlife Federation says Congress should reverse the decision.
We know that every dollar invested in natural disaster resilience and preparedness saves approximately $13 in long-term economic savings and damages and costs avoided post-disaster.
Trump has signed an executive order to dismantle the agency by which the federal government funds local libraries. The American Library Association's Cindy Hull says that especially puts rural libraries on the chopping block.
When we're looking at our small and rural communities, if we see a decrease in federal funding to the point of where it's a third or even a half of their budget, those libraries will have to make difficult decisions and they may have to close.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
One of Portland's most persistent and consequential advocates for police reform and human rights died this Wednesday. Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch, Peace and Justice Works, and Flying Focus Video Collective was 60 years old. The words tireless, informed, and committed barely scratched the surface of Handelman's work and that of his collaborators over the past 3.5 decades. In addition to direct activism with Peace and Justice Works and independent media creation with the Flying Focus Video Collective, Handelman was a fixture at nearly every meeting related to police and police accountability in Portland. He was a frequent interviewee on KABU and a go-to contact for journalists across the city. Most recently, in addition to his usual work, Handelman was a member of the city's Police Accountability Commission and helped create Portland's new Community Board for Police Accountability. On top of that, he was also a direct advocate for countless Portlanders impacted by racist, violent, and inequitable policing. KABU will explore Dan Handelman's ongoing legacy in the coming weeks. Today, we'll leave you with a quote from Teresa Rayford from the Portland Mercury's report on Handelman's death. Rayford, the founder of Don't Shoot Portland and a longtime critic of Portland's police in her own right, said, quote, "Dan was a very important person in my life. I met him after the murder of my nephew. He advised and consoled me, pointed me in the direction of the auditor's office, and would make sure I had a seat in spaces that otherwise were reserved for vetted members of our community. He was brave and considerate. The patience he showed and his determination cannot be replaced."
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali, then at 7, Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will be mostly cloudy, will drop from 59 degrees to 49 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be partly cloudy with around 60 degrees, which is expected to drop to 42 in the evening. Today in history, the first live sporting event was broadcasted on the radio in Pittsburgh in 1921. The quote of the day is from American writer Leo Rostin, who said, quote, "A conservative is one who admires radicals centuries after they're dead."
A small tribal gaming hall in Alaska is a big hit, but it's facing a lawsuit from the state. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. It's a double-wide trailer off the Birchwood exit on the outskirts of Anchorage, Alaska. Not exactly a Las Vegas-style casino, but since the Acluna Tribe's new gaming hall opened in January, there are often long lines of people waiting to get in. That could change if the state is successful in its bid to shut down the gambling operation. On Wednesday, the Alaska Attorney General asked a federal court in Washington, D.C. to issue a preliminary injunction against it. This follows a lawsuit the state filed in February after the Interior Department approved the project in the final days of the Biden administration. The Chenon Gaming Hall sits on a native allotment near the Birchwood Airport. The Interior Department under Biden said the Acluna tribe has sovereignty over the land, just as tribes in the lower 48 have over reservations where gaming is allowed. But the state is fighting that decision based on previous court cases that gave the state jurisdiction over native allotments. Aaron Leggett, president of the Acluna tribe, called the latest court filing disheartening, a sign that Governor Mike Dunleavy is escalating his attack on tribal sovereignty. In a statement, he touted the success of the casino and its potential to bring jobs and economic opportunity to the region. The gaming hall is in a temporary building with fewer than 100 electronic bingo games. The tribe plans to expand to a larger facility with more machines and restaurants. Minnesota's unemployment rate is low, but the state still faces a skilled labor shortage. A regional college hopes to be a solution as it looks to break ground on a new training center for in-demand jobs. Data shows Minnesota has a job vacancy rate of more than 5%. That's above the desired goal of around 4%, with the older population leaving the workforce. At White Earth Tribal and Community College, school president Anna Shepherd says not having a big enough talent pool for certain job types is a problem in her part of the state.
You know, we've had to wait for electricians to come in, just do work here, just because there's not money in this area.
The school is planning a trades building on campus to develop the next generation of plumbers, electricians, and other skilled workers. It could also benefit White Earth's plan to expand its renewable energy programming for students. The project's cost is $15 million. Supporters hope the state will chip in, but a tighter spending mood in the legislature, along with the impact of federal cuts, could make that difficult. White Earth Student Senate President Deidre Berg sees this planned building as a way to keep Indigenous students post-graduation in surrounding communities that struggle with limited wages and a lack of resources.
We are a food desert area, and so that's like a really big issue here. We'd like to be able to offer our people, our students, the tools to get their education here and hopefully stay close to home and build our community up.
The organization Fresh Energy says training students for projects like solar power development can help local economies get stronger. Campus officials say they've already secured land for the trades building and the architectural renderings are complete. If state aid is slow, White Earth will try to line up grants and other support. Training could begin as early as fall of 2027. An India mascot bill has passed the Illinois House of Representatives. WIFR reports the legislation prohibits K-12 schools in the state from using a Native American name, logo, or mascot. It passed by a vote of 71-40. If signed into law, schools will have until 2026 to make changes. The bill now heads to the Senate. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
If your library is thriving, you have Generation Z to thank. A study by the American Library Association showed that Zoomers, along with millennials, are visiting more physical libraries than older generations. April is National Library Month as well as National Poetry Month. Roz Brown has more on the story.
April is both National Poetry and National Library Month, and younger generations are embracing both. The American Library Association says Gen Z and millennials are using public libraries both in person and digitally at higher rates than older generations. They're also engaging with poetry, but often not the classics taught in school. Instead, minimalist verses set to music and posted on social media platforms like TikTok and Instagram. Lauren Camp is New Mexico's current poet laureate.
There's easy access for poetry. There's access through libraries. Libraries are pretty much my favorite place and have been for my whole life.
Camp, the Arab American daughter of a Jewish Iraqi immigrant, has lived in New Mexico for 30 years. She's the author of 8 poetry collections and New Mexico's second poet laureate. Multiple libraries across the state, including those in Taos, Santa Fe, and Albuquerque, have scheduled poetry readings and other literary events this month. Some research shows that fiction readers often are more empathetic, better able to put themselves in someone else's shoes. Camp says you shouldn't expect to like all poets or poetry any more than you like all music or all art, but believes finding a handful that you like can enrich your life.
In these very fraught, complicated times, we all need to find more ways of accessing empathy for another. And I think poetry is a really good way to do that because it narrows down to one experience and one sliver of one experience.
This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
The nonprofit Out in Climate connects queer people working in climate and sustainability. They say radical imagination and creativity and reinvention is something that queer people have to bring to the climate movement. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As a member of the nonprofit Out in Climate, Max Joshua helps host events where LGBTQ plus people who work in climate and sustainability can build community and network with one another.
It's just nice creating these spaces where people can be themselves.
Joshua says throughout her career in climate tech, she's been surrounded by many supportive colleagues. But at times, being transgender in the workplace can be difficult.
It can be challenging. There's some uncomfortable interactions sometimes with people at some companies, and you might not see anybody like you in your professional sphere. So I really wanted to be part of a community that is actively trying to make people feel welcome in the climate space and where we try and support and uplift each other.
So she hopes the Out in Climate events help other queer people see the value they bring to climate careers.
Coming out as a queer person, growing into your full, authentic self, it's an act of radical imagination and creativity in the face of a lot of social opposition, usually. And I think that that kind of radical imagination and creativity and reinvention is something that we really need in the climate movement. We need people who can envision a better world, a different world, and then create the systems level changes that are actually needed to make it a reality.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Now we go to The Point Puzzle, a weekly radio brain teaser produced by Pearl Stark at KPOV Bend. On this edition, what did these words have in common?
It's time for the puzzle.
And who do we think we are? Some kind of cosmic shooting stars. No, we're not. Haven't got all that time. Got to find a common ground. Not the other way around.
Last week, I asked you what the following words have in common. Brain, super, handy, and real. Well, there were no correct answers, so I'm going to give you a couple more words from the category and another week. So what do the following words have in common? Brain, super, handy, real, razzle, and meal. Those words again are brain, super, handy, real, razzle, and meal. To see these words in writing, visit the Point Puzzle page of the KPOV website, kpov.org. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Isn't in a puzzle, and it is a be a was. In the middle of a muddle, it'll trickle to a flood. But don't let the rain go and drizzle on your muzzle. It's a puzzle, and it is a be a was. Just a puzzle, and it is a be a was.
This has been Pearl Stark with your Point Puzzle for the week of April 6th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 11th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem, John Nelson, and Sam Bowman. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Santiago Ortega. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Kenny, Antonia Gonzalez, Roz Brown, Pearl Stark, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Tim Nakayama, Diablo. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, we're learning from Jonah Valdez at The Intercept that the Trump administration is now revoking visas.